Okay, so now the first lecture will be it will be very conceptual, just to mainly I'm trying to motivate why you would want to have a topos representation of quantum theory. And yeah, so it will be conceptual and a bit philosophical in nature. Then it'll get technical, don't worry, but for now it's more conceptual. Okay, so now the main point is that we're going to try and redefine or reformulate quantum theory using a different type of maths, namely topos theory, which I will describe. And the reason you want to do this is because, as it stands, the canonical formulation of quantum theory, it has inherent in the mathematical formulation certain conceptual problems in the formalism. Even those, we'll analyze how they come about and what they are later on. But it is true that the way in which quantum theory is expressed mathematically implies certain interpretations of the theory which are not very clear, so have problems. And the main point is that when you have a theory of physics, you normally have a system you want to describe, and so what you do is you define a mathematical model for that system, and the way in which you define this mathematical model then implies a certain interpretation, which in turn implies a certain view of the world. So classical theory, the mathematical way in which classical theory is expressed, implies a view of the world which is realist in nature, and I'll describe later on exactly what I mean. But it is true that when doing classical physics, the mathematics they use resonates with how we see the world. Right? In classical theory, assume that things are out there, you can talk about them, they've got properties, they interact in a certain way. And this, very generally, is a realist theory. Now, in quantum theory, things are a little bit more complicated. So the mathematics doesn't quite imply a realist theory, but we'll see that later. But what is important is that the way in which a theory of physics is described mathematically implies a certain view of the world. There's a clear connection between the mathematical model and the kind of philosophical view that this model implies about the world. So in order to really understand how a theory of physics, how this relation is defined, one needs to kind of trace a bit back the steps and understand, first of all, what a theory of physics really is, very generally, and what you're trying to do with it. Right? So the first question that I'll try to answer, not obviously not completely, because that would take an entire course in philosophy, but we try to answer this question. So what is So actually, I forgot to say, right, that I will also give handouts of the lecture notes. I mean, it's not exactly going to be the same as what I write, so if you want to also take notes, it's okay. But I will give not at each lesson, but maybe at each week I'll give the handouts. Okay, so there's the question. Okay, now, as I said, I won't really give a thorough answer to this. It's been before. I won't give a thorough answer to this because that would just take forever. But I'll try and give a little bit of an answer. And so a possible way of answering this is, well, a short answer is the following. Actually, I'll take notes. So a theory of physics can be seen as a mathematical. model which answers a series of questions which, I mean, these questions have been asked since, I think since humanity was born, this type of questions, and they're still not answered really. But physics, like, I don't know, religion or philosophy, they, in essence, they are trying to answer these questions just in different ways. So these questions are the following. What is a thing? Which seems a very stupid question, but it's actually a very complicated one. And there's actually, I don't know if you're interested in philosophy, I don't know, he's philosophy. This guy here, I think his book is actually, well, he's German, but the German translation of this, and he writes entire essays, and okay, it's very complicated, but he tries to answer this question. And a theory of physics, I mean, when you do a theory of physics, you have a system and you want to understand what the system is. So you have to first say, okay, try and at least answer what the system is. You have to assume, for example, in answering a question, you have to assume if the system exists or not. Because if it does exist, then okay, you can go on and define it in terms of properties that the system possesses, like classical physics. If it doesn't exist, then you have a bit of a problem. Okay, so that's the first question. Then second is how do whatever you mean by things relate to each other? And these are kind of, I suppose, oh dear, how do you spell it? Kind of ontological questions, like you try and understand what is out there, if there's anything out there. And then there's also more kind of epistemological questions. So how do we know the above too? Now these questions in various theories of physics are answered differently. And the way in which they're answered is that first you define a model of your theory, and this model will have certain mathematical constructs, and the interpretation of this mathematical construct will, in a way, give an answer to these questions. So again, in classical physics, it's easy, right? In classical physics, the philosophy implied by the structure is a realist philosophy, so that you say the chalk really exists, the chalk is white, I can talk about it. So in classical physics, a thing is defined in terms of a collection of properties. And it's kind of straightforward, and this resonates with how you see, right? And in classical physics, again, how do we know things? Okay, the relations obviously will depend on what model, on equation, etc. How do we know things? Well, again, in classical physics, you measure stuff, so is the chalk white? Well, I look at it, yes, it is white. And so in classical physics, it's kind of straightforward to answer these questions. Not quite so in quantum theory. Okay, so the main theories we're going to look at, as I just said, are classical physics and quantum theory. Now, it will show, we will see how the answers to these questions that these two theories give will show the radical differences that these two theories have, both how they're constructed and also the view of the world that they imply by giving different answers to these questions. Okay. However, before doing that, I'll just write, can I delete this? Yeah? Before doing this, so how do they answer this question's first conception? I will define the details later, but now just at a conceptual level, what you do is that you define of the system or nature, whatever you're considering, and then the interpretation. Of the model will give you the conceptual answers to those questions. Now, mathematically, the answers to those questions are given by the model, but what they actually mean are only given by the interpretation. So, interpretation of such model gives rise to a philosophical view of the world. Okay, so this is how the kind of recipe, so to say, to understand how the mathematical model in a theory gives rise to a philosophical view. Now, these are the main questions. Obviously, it's very general, right? But these are the basic questions that in order to be a theory of physics, you should address. Now, I forgot to say this is kind of. Oh, do you know what this, I said what this meant, right? Do you know epistemological? Oops, thank you. Sorry, my spelling is really bad. So this is the study of how we know things. Okay, so these are the three main questions that you try and answer. Obviously, each of them presupposes a lot of sub-questions. So in order to really define a mathematical model and interpretation of it, you really have to refine these questions to make them a bit more precise. And this is what we'll do now. So we will define a set of refinements of those questions whose answers, again, given by classical physics and quantum theory, will show the difference that subsists in these two theories. Okay, so the collection of refinement questions are the following. So what is the system so what are we talking about basically? You need to know that in a theory of physics. Then the second is the ontological so if once you define your physics terms, what do they actually mean and do they really represent whatever system you're trying to describe. Then the epistemological, so how do you actually get to know your physical term? So status is the same. Then there's the relation between the mathematical so you need to understand the precise relation of your mathematical model with whatever you're trying to describe. Because obviously, if you're trying to describe something, you need to know if what you're defining is correct. This wants to go up. Number five is, which is actually important, how can statesmen be verified? So once you define your statements, how can you know if something is true or false or whatever? And then the nearly last one, the nature of space and time. And then the meaning of probabilities if your theory has probabilities. Okay, so this roughly, I mean, they probably have more questions, but roughly this is, these are seven of the questions that any theory of physics, in order to, sorry, to be a well-defined theory of physics, should address. And I won't talk about all of them, because that would take a long time, but I'll just mention some, or at least certain aspects of both classical physics and quantum theory, which provide an answer to this question. And we will see how the answers given by these two theories to these questions will show you how different they are and what the difference, the precise difference between the philosophical view of the world that you have in classical theory and the one that you have in quantum theory. So what is important in all this is a clear, which I'm going to leave it here, a clear understanding of the following, which is basically the main point I'm trying to make in all this, is the following, that there is a clear relation between the mathematical tools used to this So that's basically the main point, that there is a clear connection between the maths that you use to basically answer these questions and the interpretation of the way you answer this question mathematically and the conception of the world that you derive from these mathematical statements. And this is precisely the, not the trick, but the idea on in Topos theory. So I said that as it stands, quantum theory, as it is expressed mathematically, implies certain conceptual problems. So the idea is that if you have a system and you describe with a type of maths, as we've seen, this type of maths will then induce a certain interpretation of it, which then induce a philosophy about the world. Now, if you have problems in the interpretation, a way is to use a different type of maths to describe the same system. And it could be that the interpretation that you gain from it will be different, and it will be so different that the conceptual problems that you had in the old framework don't actually apply in this one. And this is basically what's happening in Topos theory. So you rewrite quantum theory using a different type of maths, which will then give you a different philosophical position or a different conceptual interpretation of the theory, which in a way solves certain problems which were present in the old formulation. This is the idea. Okay, so now, what is exactly the way in which classical theory answers those questions, and what is the philosophy implied by the way in which classical theory answers those questions? So the next thing is we're going to do is a fill of classical theory. This is actually quite easy because, as I said, it's the way we actually think. Well, some of us anyway. Okay, so now I will prove, I won't prove them. What I'm going to say, I will not prove it in this lecture, or at least mathematically I won't prove it in this lecture, but I'll do it in others. So for now, I'm just going to state what the philosophy of classical theory is. How it's derived, I think, in lecture 3, I'll do it. But for now, I'll just state it. And the philosophy of classical physics is the following, that classical theory, whatever, is realist. Now, by realist, I mean the following. So that properties can be said to possess. I think it's for us. Well, by objects. So, actually, I shall write it differently. Sorry. I mean, this is what it is, but it's too many terms which are undefined. I'm not going to write it like this. I'm going to write it a different way. So, we'll say that is meaningful. To okay, so one feature of realist theory is that it is meaningful to say the sentence, the chalk is white. So in classical theory, this sentence has got a meaning. And the reason is because in classical theory, or the mathematics of classical theory, assumes that things do exist out there independently of me, and that the things do have properties independent of me. So the chalk is white makes sense. If you had a non-realist theory, like, for example, in quantum theory, the chalk is white is absolutely meaningless because you can't really say that things are out there independently of you or their properties are out there independently of you. And the second, that the propositions... Okay, first I write it, then I explain what I'm saying. Okay, so now another feature of a realist theory is that the collection of propositions undergo a certain logic. Now, a proposition just means a sentence, right? So the chalk is white is a proposition. Obviously, also, I'm happy as a proposition, but because we're in physics, we normally talk about propositions regarding values of quantities. And the collection of all these propositions undergo a certain logic, which is called Boolean logic. I don't know how many are familiar with Boolean logic. I'll give the technical definition, not now, but later on. But basically, Boolean logic is the logic that you actually use in language, you use in reasoning, and is a logic which has only two truth values. So either something is true or it is false, nothing in between. And so the chalk is either white or is not white. And it has a collection of logical connectives. And by logical connectives, I mean symbols which enable you to create composite sentences. And these logical connectives in a Boolean logic have exactly the same meaning that they have in our language. So there are actually four. You have and, not, if, then, and or. And not if, then, and or. And mathematically, they're, well, they're expressed in a certain way, but their meaning is exactly what you mean in normal language. Eh? Well, not really. I mean, if you have...
Yeah, exactly. When you say it, you mean exclusive or...
Oh, no, okay, yes. So this is only true if at least one of them is true.
Yeah, exactly. And at least.
Yes. Okay, sorry, okay. A good point.
Yeah, a cake or a cookie. No, I mean, if somebody gives you both, that's
not... No, that's a good point. Yeah, that's true. So, okay. All right, then you are familiar a little bit with Boolean logic. Okay, good. okay, and the fact that the collection of propositions undergo a Boolean logic is another feature of a realist theory. So this is what I mean by a realist theory, that it has these two features. And classical theory is a realist theory. Precisely because it does have these two features. Okay, and what this implies is that, I already said it before, but I'll just repeat it, that in classical theory, oh, this doesn't go down, that then the answer to what is a thing given in classical theory is the following. So a thing is defined in terms of a collection of properties. So is the bearer of properties. And this definition, so this answer to this question can only be given because the mathematical formulas of classical theory implies that the theory is realist. Otherwise, that definition of what is a thing would be utterly meaningless. Now, it should be pointed out that you actually have two types of properties, just to be precise. So you have the internal ones, which is actually what defines the thing, which relate only to the system. And then the external properties, which these don't really define what a thing is, but defines the relation that the thing has with other ones. So relation with other systems. So, this is like mass. Charge, right, etc. This is velocity, position, etc. And when you talk about a thing, you normally talk about the internal properties in classical physics. And as I said, other two features which are characteristic of classical physics, and which are important for the interpretation of the theory, are the concept of measurement in classical physics, which in classical physics is not a special thing, right? It's just something that enables you to measure properties, define the internal or external properties. So there's no special status to measurement in classical theory, so it allows you to know. Come? Well, yeah, determines. That determines values of quantities. Let's try that. But it doesn't imply a division, so does not a division between observer and observed system. Since in classical physics, both the observer and observed system exist independently of each other, as a realist theory. So momentarily, obviously, there is a distinction because I'm measuring something, but it's not an ontological distinction. So it's just a temporary distinction. It's a functional distinction. But classical theory is very democratic. Everything is on the same plane. We both exist in the same way, independent of each other. And then the last thing, okay, I'll just write, is that classical theory is deterministic. This is just another feature worth mentioning. Classical physics. Well, okay, in the sense that... Yeah, okay, but in
the same ontology would
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose in the sense, but yeah, deterministic is that if you have a state at some time, then you can kind of define. But yeah, okay, it would be the same.
Usually non-deterministic, like stochastic classical theories are epistemological ones, as opposed to, it's usually you're averaging
that's,
over some other effect.
That's what we usually assume. Could possibly be. It could be. It could
true.
Come from our ignorance, or it could come from the dynamics
true.
Of the system in principle.
Okay. But it would still be valid. It would still hold, even if it was. Okay, so now what? I don't know where to go here. Can I cancel this? Delete. This is really crap. Oh, okay, so that was a very kind of conceptual description of classical theory. Now, as I said, is everything okay?
We're discussing the chalkboard.
Oh, right. Yeah, I think maybe we should clean this thing. Next time I'll try and clean. So this was a very conceptual description of classical theory, and I mean, I didn't exactly say how it answers all the questions, but I said that the mathematical formulation implies that this is the interpretation of the theory, which enables you to answer some of those questions. Now, the other thing to understand is what exactly are the mathematical constructs in classical physics whose interpretation will induce a realist view of the theory? And in particular, what are those elements which, when expressed mathematically, and the way they are expressed mathematically, will imply a realist view of the theory? Because this is what happens, that you have certain constructs which pretty much are in every theory of physics, for example, the concept of the state space is both in classical and quantum theory, but mathematically is expressed very differently. And the way in which it's expressed will imply different answers to these questions. So what are, now again, here because just the introductory, I'm not going to do all of them, and I'll explain it much more in details and mathematically in other lectures. Now this is just a very general overview. So what are the mathematical elements. Which defined both in classical physics and quantum theory will imply different interpretations of the theory. And these are the following. So as I said, is the concept of a state space. Now in classical theory, the way in which a state space is defined is such that conceptually, you can just think of it. Well, that's actually what it is, but anyway, it's a collection of states such that. Each state at a given time really represents the system as in bodies, all the properties. Of the system. Very general, but there's eventually what you end up with. Then you have the debatable principle of causality. Then you have the concept, of a proposition. Now again, this I think is in lecture three, but the way in which a proposition is defined in classical physics will be very different in how a proposition is defined in quantum theory. And again, the way in which it will define will imply certain interpretations of the theory. But this again, I'll deal with it. I think it's lecture three. But for now, just it's important to understand that how this and others concepts, which are then expressed mathematically in a certain way, will determine the interpretation of your theory. That is the main point here. Then the logic of propositions, which in classical physics is Boolean, which is distributive, and then the meaning of probabilities. Which in classical physics, just the standard classical definition of probabilities, right? Positive outcomes divided by all possible outcomes. So I'll just write it. So in classical physics, you have and obviously, inherent in here is also not just the concept of a state space, but I mean, also the concept of a state, right, as the bearer of properties. So these are the main concepts which, when expressed in mathematical terms, will imply a certain interpretation of the theory, which in classical physics is a realist interpretation. Now, all these terms will be expressed in quantum theory in a very different mathematical way, which will imply, as we'll see, that quantum theory is not realist at all. So let's write about quantum theory now. And it's precisely the way in which standard quantum theory expresses those and also others, but mainly those elements. So it's the way in which it expresses those elements which causes the interpretational problems which I mentioned at the start. And when we will define a topos representation of quantum theory, we'll define all of these elements in a very different way as to how they're defined in standard quantum theory. Okay, so so we've seen that classical theory is realist. What is the, what if you can call it, philosophical picture of quantum theory, of canonical quantum theory, right? And if you, when you study quantum theory, then you end up with a view that is very different from classical theory. And the reason, the main points of differing are the following. First of all, you cannot say that, so can't say that properties belong to a system. So you can't answer the question, what is a thing, in the same way that classical physics answers it, precisely because of this. So, I mean, you know that when in quantum theory you get probabilities of outcomes. So you do a repeated set of measurements, you get probabilities of outcomes. But what you get is not exactly what there was there before the measurement. You get probabilities of outcome. This is exactly what you get. You don't get affirmations of values of quantities. So before the measurement was performed, you can't say pretty much nothing about the system. So in this sense, you can't answer it, the question, what is a thing, in a realist way. So the second is the concept of a measurement. So in quantum theory, differently from classical theory, now a measurement becomes a very special type of interaction. Because it's as if it brings the properties into being. And this is very, but before the measurement, you can't say anything. Then after the measurement, you know that the result of that measurement will tell you that a given value has occurred. But before that, you can't say anything. So the measurement, it acquires a very special type of interaction. And what this implies is, and then there's a clear distinction between observer and observed system. So they're not the same thing. So that you can't really say, as in classical physics, that they both exist out there and the measurement is just a type of interaction. But there's a very distinct distinction. And the thing is that any interpretations of quantum theory really need this distinction and the concept of measurement to make any sense whatsoever. Because and this is precisely why quantum theory has got problems. So for example, in quantum cosmology, how do you do this? You can't really define an observer and observed system. How do you define measurement? I don't know. How do you define probabilities, which are really dependent on the definition of measurement and on this distinction? So these are other problems. The concept of a state. Now, in classical physics, is very straightforward, right? A state was a bearer of properties. In quantum theory, you can't really define a state that way because you can't say the properties belong to anything. So what is a state? To be honest, I still don't know. But generally, a state is basically seen as a mathematical tool So a state doesn't anymore, in any meaningful way at least, it doesn't define the system as it does in classical physics, but it becomes the most convenient way of then being able to compute outcomes of measurement. Now, it's still debatable, really, if a state in quantum theory even can be said to belong to a single system. I mean, there's some interpretation that considers state as a collection of identically prepared systems, which then you perform measurements, and then that's why you get probabilities. But if you're a realist, you would like to have a state defined to a single system. But that's still, at least I still don't know what they really mean by a state. But, I mean, at least they mean that. And then the fourth is that quantum theory is still deterministic. Well, let's put it like that. Without considering measurement. The difference is that what evolves now is not the same thing as what evolves in classical physics, but now what evolves are basically predictions of probabilities, not actual values. So as you see, now this picture that emerges from quantum theory and how it's described mathematically is very, very different from classical theory. So you can't really, from these characteristics, you can't really say that quantum theory is realist. You can't really say that quantum theory is a theory that tells you that there is anything out there that can be known, or at least, yeah, not really. So these features of quantum theory make quantum theory non-realist. Oh, and I forgot to say that the concept of probabilities, because of all this, is the relative frequency interpretation of probability. So because of this, quantum theory is a non-realist theory or relative frequency or instrumentalist theory, so that all that it can tell you about nature is that if you do a sequence of measurements, then you get probabilities of outcome. This is pretty much all that it can tell you. Philosophically, it tells you a lot of things, but philosophically is all it can tell you. Okay, so now what are the problems? What are the conceptual problems which this non-realist view of quantum theory causes? And the problems are the following. And these are precisely the problems that one tries to overcome when defining a I'll write the problems and then I'm done. And so these problems are the problems that one tries to overcome when defining a Topos version of quantum theory. And the problems are the following. So this I already said at the start, but anyway, the notion of measurement and the division between observer and observed system in the context of quantum cosmology. So how do you make sense of these things? And how do you make sense, always in the context of quantum cosmology, of the relative frequency interpretation of probabilities? So quantum theory, for it to make sense, it needs the definition of measurement as a special type of interaction. It needs this distinction, and which then implies this. But all these definitions are very hard to apply in the context of quantum cosmology, so in the context of any closed system, in fact, not just quantum cosmology, but any closed system. Then the problem that the instrumentalist interpretation of quantum theory so it requires the notion of fixed space-time background. Where you perform the measurement. But then this is problematic in quantum gravity, where you're trying to define properties of space-time. So how do you do it in that case? And then, oops, the last one. How does one so this, I mean, there are others, but these are the most fundamental, I think, problems which the non-realist interpretation of quantum theory caused by the mathematics in which quantum theory is expressed. These are the most fundamental problems. Now, the idea in the topos reformulation of quantum theory is to try and overcome these problems, as I said before, by rewriting quantum theory. Now, we've seen that these problems don't arise in classical physics, which is a realist theory. So a possibility of overcoming these problems is trying to rewrite quantum theory with a different type of maths, such that the definitions, the mathematical definition of these constructs, resemble the way in which they're defined in classical theory. In this way, you retain some realism in quantum theory, and the hope is that then this conceptual problems are overcome. That's the main idea. Now, in the next lecture, I will try and define, because this was very kind of conceptual, but there is one theorem, well, there are various theorems, but the main theorem which is present in quantum theory and which makes it non-realist is the so-called Cauchy-Speicher theorem. And in the next lecture, or tomorrow, I'll describe what it is, and I'll prove it, and then show that it does imply a non-realist view of quantum theory. But for now, I'll finish. So any questions? It was all very conceptual today, but and I was trying to. Oh, yeah.
Just for the problem part, you said that there was the hope that you can overcome these problems. how concrete is that in particular with the fixed or dynamical space-time background? I mean, if we reformulate quantum mechanics as a realist theory that allows for dynamical space-time backgrounds, then...
No, it will just...
So my question is this still a hope or is this already done?
Well, what has been done is that you do not require the notion of measurement.
Okay.
So the measurement becomes secondary, and all that you can define a theory and you can define properties of objects without the notion of measurements, and you can also evaluate them. You don't have a true false, you get a multivariate logic, so it's not totally realist, but measurement doesn't have the role that it has in standard quantum theory, and probabilities don't have the same role, so you end up with probabilities are secondary to truth values, so you get a multivariate logic, which is the main structure, and probabilities can be derived by this logic, but the concept of probability doesn't require measurement and doesn't require this. Observe. But it's still, I mean, there's still a lot of hope. I mean, we've done a bit, but there's, I think, 12 years old, this program, so it's very small. But, I mean, we have managed to define a consistent way of assigning. So you can, in the Tobas framework, if you have a system, you can define any sentence regarding properties of the system, also incompatible properties, and you can define their truth value. So you can say at the same time, yes, it's got spin x in that direction, so a value of the spin x, a value of spin y, and you can define the truth values of those sentences. It's just that you don't get true or false. You get a lot of things in between. So that's the category. But it's very, I mean, we still don't even really have a dynamics in the theory. So it's very embryo. But thank you.